You're listening to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio. This show is created for entrepreneurs, business owners, marketers, and dreamers who want to learn from the experts of today and drastically shortcut their own success to build a business that supports their dream lifestyle. Since 2011, Tyler Jorgensen has been interviewing business thought leaders from around the world. A serial entrepreneur himself, Tyler also shares his personal insights into what's working in business today. Welcome to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio.
Welcome out to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio. I'm your host, Tyler Jorgensen, and today we get a visit with Myron Golden, the founder, CEO, and prime minister of Golden Enterprises, who has shed his polo shirt today from the golf course and dressed up to impress. And so welcome out to the show, Myron.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Tyler. Appreciate it.
So, Myron, I first came into your sphere when a friend of ours in Russell Brunson's inner circle posted a very casual post of, "Oh my gosh, Myron just got done talking at Inner Circle and I think I'm going to lose my mind. It was so amazing." And I was like, "Who is this guy?" So I started looking for you and I'm like, "Who is this?" This was probably 2016, maybe 17. And then you graced the stage of Funnel Hacking Live in 2018 and you talked about selling is serving and really helped a lot of people in that room change their whole perspective on what, because a lot of people feel icky about selling. Now, I'm just going to tell you, that's a little bit of my first couple of experiences. They've only been positive impressions every time I've met you. But let's dial all the way back.
Sure.
When did you first realize that you are an entrepreneur?
Well, I was actually an entrepreneur before I realized it. And then I first realized I was an entrepreneur in 1985. So I came home from my freshman year in college. And I bought a car for $50. I grew up poor. My parents were hardworking poor people and they had seven sons. I was number two. And we always bought inexpensive cars. When I say inexpensive, I mean really inexpensive, right? So I bought this car to just drive around for the summer, found it in the Pakistan Herald, which was a local newspaper, $50, paid the guy $50, got the car, got the title, got the tags, got the insurance, all that stuff. Drove it around all summer. And then before I went back to college, because I had a 900-mile trek, I wasn't going to drive a $50 car 900 miles. I sold it. And a guy offered me $300 for it. So I bought it for $50, sold it for $300. I was like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I made a $250 profit after using the car all summer. And then stumbled into buying old cars and fixing them up and selling them. That was my first entrepreneurial endeavor.
I love that. That's a much cooler than like mowing lawns, you know. That's flipping cars at a young age.
In the words of Jim Rohn, profits are better than wages, right? So we like profits. And that was my first entrepreneurial endeavor, but I didn't even realize it was entrepreneurial. I was just trying to survive, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so in 1985, I got started in my first official professional entrepreneurial endeavor, right? And I got recruited to sell insurance and investments for a financial services company. And I was so woefully awful at selling, Tyler. I was probably the worst salesperson in the history of the world. Certainly one of them.
Oh, man.
And I was so bad. And I know people are thinking, well, how bad could he be? I was this bad. I started in October of 1985. I did not make my first sale until April of 1987. I was literally in the business for 18 months before I made my first sale.
Man.
And what's interesting about that to me, I think that was one of the most critical parts of my journey for several reasons. Would you like to know what those are?
Please tell me.
Number one, I learned the lesson of being willing to be bad long enough to get good. Everybody wants somebody to pay them a lot of money for the stuff they're good at. But unfortunately, most of the stuff they're good at just doesn't pay much money. So in the things that are going to pay you a lot of money, you didn't start out being good at them.
Right.
But the second thing, I didn't gain this valuable lesson from that experience until decades later, and that is I learned how to stop working for money. Because even though it took me a year and a half to get my first paycheck, I was doing presentations every week. I was talking to tons and tons of people, but everybody was saying no. I didn't know why they were saying no. I have no idea why they were saying no. I had no idea then. I know now. The reason they were saying no was because I didn't have any influence. And the reason I didn't have any influence is because I was broke. Now, a lot of people are not going to like the fact that I said that, but that's okay. You've been wrong before, you can be wrong. No, I'm just kidding. But that's okay. You don't have to agree with me. I believe that truth does not require a consensus. In the words of Winston Churchill, truth is incontrovertible. Malice may attack it. Ignorance may deride it. But in the end, there it is. So
true.
I had no influence. I love what King Solomon said. He was the wisest, wealthiest man who ever lived. If he were alive today, he'd be a multi-trillionaire. And he said, wisdom is better than strength, but a poor man's wisdom is despised. So I didn't have influence because I was broke. And something interesting happened. In April of 1987, I made my first sale. My first commission check was $125.66. That was my first commission check. And I was jacked out of my mind, and I knew I was going to be rich, which I know those two don't necessarily go together, right? And so I thought, I'm going to keep doing this. And fast forward, within a couple of months, I was the top salesperson in our office. You know what somebody asked me one time, Tyler? They said, Myron, what happened? What was the switch that went off in your mind that took you from not being able to make a sale for a year and a half to becoming the top salesman in your office within a couple of months? And I said, that's easy. During that first year and a half, I literally went through all the ways that making a sale would not work. The right. only thing I had left were the things that would. And enough, most people don't go through enough iterations. They don't make enough offers. They resist the very thing that is the only thing that can make their life better. I did not resist it. I embraced it. I embraced the difficulties of the journey until the difficulties of the journey became no longer difficult. They just became the journey.
That's powerful. And honestly, one of the things that you've constantly talked about is progress and growth and how, you know, you got to be willing to face and you got to be willing to change. Right. So, but you also said you didn't have enough influence. So was it a combination of learning all the ways that it didn't work and then starting to like stack influence? Okay. I got my first sale. I can lean into that and like point back to that credibility. And so that kind of two tiers.
Well, even more than pointing back to that credibility. So what the sale did in me was more important than what the sale did for me.
That makes sense.
Okay. Because now I became a person who sees himself as someone who can sell.
So it was really an identity shift.
There was an identity shift. That's right. I became a person who said, instead of being, I am bad at sales, now I could say, I am good at sales, right? Because I made a sale. Now right. I am a person who can sell. It's really interesting. You said one of the things that I did when I spoke at Funnel Hacking Live is I showed people that selling is, you know, it's a good, honorable, and noble profession. I believe not only is it good, honorable, and noble, I believe it's one of the most good, honorable, and noble professions that exist. But most people feel icky about sales, not because sales is bad, but because the only sales experiences we usually remember are the bad ones. And the reason right. we remember the bad ones is because the good sales experiences that we have are so seamless, they don't feel like sales experience. They just feel Correct. Like we bought something, we wanted it.
And probably left Exactly. feeling an elevation of status or an elevation of experience. It didn't feel like Absolutely. A sales. It felt like a journey, right? Well, it felt great.
Exactly. Because, and here's the problem. People have misdefined selling. People think that selling is convincing. Talking right. somebody into buying something they don't want, don't need, and can't afford. But I submit to you that selling is not convincing. In fact, selling is persuasion, and persuasion is the opposite of convincing. Convincing is when I attempt to get somebody to do something I desire them to do for my reasons. Persuasion is when I help someone make a decision they already desire to make for their own reasons. So when I'm selling to you, I am using your reasons to sell to you, not mine. And you are so tuned into the result that you desire, and I'm so tuned into the result that you desire, that we both work on helping you get that result together.
Right.
But if I don't do that, and if I fail to persuade you, now I've got to resort to attempting to convince you to buy because I need to make a sale. And that's what feels icky to the person selling and the person being sold to.
I've often heard that it is that ethical sales is when you help people make the decision they should be making anyways, but they're holding themselves back for whatever their own reservations are. So it's not helping them navigate them to the choice they should be making. Like, humans are not great decision makers. You know, we second guess everything and make a 100 lists of what ifs and what and maybes. You talk about the law of advancement, right? And I think that's a little bit of what we're already starting to uncover here is like, you have to grow, you have to evolve. And you said it as in order for a seed to become a tree, it has to first be willing to not be a seed anymore, right? And that's something I talk about all the time. Like, in order for us to become what we want to be, we've got to leave behind what we are currently. And that's painful for us because it's an identity issue, right?
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that. And
I don't know if it's as painful as much as it is that we expect it to be painful.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
You see what I'm saying? So because we're expecting it to be painful, we resist it. That resistance puts off the transformation, and that put off of the transformation, that's actually the thing that creates the pain. It's really interesting, Tyler. One of the things that, as a business coach and coaching people in an entrepreneurship, one of the things that I discovered, the number one reason business owners struggle is not because they don't know what to do, but it's because they don't do the thing they know they should be doing. Instead of creating the activity, they create avoidance to that activity. And so they resist the very activity that can produce, that is the only activity that can produce the result they desire.
And you're positing that it is about the perceived or potential pain, not the actual pain. It's the anxiety of the pain, not the real experience. Absolutely. Interesting.
And anxiety is really, so if, I mean, dude, you're bringing up so much stuff. We only have like a couple more minutes. So, but I want to hit that anxiety conversation in the head, because that's where people really need, like, anxiety is the thief of your dreams. So if you understand that people only do things for one reason and one reason only, that's because they feel like it, period. That's why people do what they do. They feel like it. And so if you desire to have an outcome in your life that you're not currently having, stop trying to make yourself have the outcome and learn how to make yourself feel like doing the thing that's going to produce the outcome. When you're selling to people, stop trying to get them to buy. Create an environment that makes them feel like buying. Okay? And here's what I mean by that. We get a fact in our head and we think the fact is the thing that makes all the difference. Well, that happened. Coronavirus, 2020, political unrest, racial unrest, social unrest. And we look at those situations and we think that thing is messing up my life. That thing's not messing up your life. The frame that you put around that fact is called focus. So the focus that you have on the fact is actually the thing that's creating your problem. Because when you focus on it, you're going to create a belief about that thing. Your belief, though, shows up as a two-sided coin. That landed on heads. The heads of belief is called faith. The tails of belief is called doubt. Doubt and faith are both belief. Faith is belief in the outcome I desire. Doubt is belief in the outcome I don't desire. When I have a stronger belief in the outcome I don't desire than I do the outcome I do desire, I have doubt. Well, guess what? Doubt, it's a focus in my head that creates a feeling in my heart. Guess what that feeling in my heart manifests as? If it lands on heads, the feeling that I have, it's faith, and faith creates a feeling in my heart called anticipation. Well, anticipation of a desirable future outcome energizes us to take the action that can produce that outcome in the future.
Loving it.
But if it lands on tails, and so the focus in my head creates doubt, and that's the belief I have, it's going to create a feeling in my heart called anxiety. Anxiety robs me of present energy and causes me to produce the outcome I don't desire in the future. That's why they say worrying about a thing makes it happen. See, people think that fear and anxiety are the same thing because they make us feel similarly. But fear and anxiety are not the same thing. Fear is caution over a real and present danger. Anxiety, on the other hand, is caution over a future imagined danger. So I'm expecting an outcome I don't desire. What if they don't buy? What if they slam the door in my face? What if they say no? What if I lose this client? And so I'm expecting an outcome I don't desire. That focus on that outcome I don't desire creates the feeling of anxiety in my heart. It feels like fear, but it's not fear because the danger is not real and it's not present. It's future and imagined. And so having anxiety causes me to waste present energy on a future outcome that is undesirable to me. So the focus in my head creates a feeling in my heart, and the feeling in my heart creates a function in my hand. If the feeling in my heart is anticipation, the function in my hand is power. If the feeling in my heart is anxiety, the function in my hand is paralysis. I can't move.
But my question now is, so what? What do they do about it? Like, people are clearly stuck dealing with anxiety. Now, how do they
do about it?
Yeah.
You have to develop a new discipline.
Okay.
And here's the discipline that must be developed. So understand that expectation is a human being's greatest superpower. Your ability to expect an outcome in the future is the greatest superpower you have. If you do not develop the discipline to use it to only, what's the word I just used, Tyler?
Only.
To only expect outcomes you desire and give absolutely no energy to outcomes you don't desire, you will spend the rest of your life stuck like Chuck in a pickup truck.
So, man, I absolutely, it's probably only a couple of things I like as much as when you get into your rants, because they're amazing and inspiring. But let's dial back to Myron the insurance salesman, right?
Sure.
So you start to get some success, right? You start now, Myron's pulling himself out of, you're not the poor Myron little boy anymore, right? You've started to find success. What was the next hurdle that you hit? And then how'd you overcome that?
So the next hurdle that I overcame was, so I was good at sales and I was making, you know, I had my full-time job and then I had my part-time gig selling insurance and investments. That's my part-time gig, right? And then after that, I started selling radio advertising and then I started selling supplements. See, I was willing to do something most people are not willing to do. We're not willing to do. And that is, I was willing to seek until I found. And most people stop seeking and say, there's nothing out there. No, you just have not developed yourself into the person yet who can find it. And so eventually I had my first six-figure year. And the first six-figure year I had was the direct result of the greatest, like I've made millions of dollars. Here's what I want you to see. I had the greatest financial breakthrough of my life in 1999. Because I started selling insurance investments in 1985. I didn't have my first six-figure year until 1999. I didn't have my first seven-figure year until 2005, okay? Now, in April of 1999, I accidentally, without having it as a goal, without having it on a dream board, I accidentally made $6,200 in 1 week. The year before that, 1998, I made $48,000 for the whole year. And now, in 1 week's time, I make $6,000? I was so blown away by that, Tyler, I said, the first thing I said was, wow. The second thing I did was I said it backwards. I said, wow. And then I said, I'm blown away by how easy that was. It was so easy that that must mean, and here's the financial breakthrough that I had. It's easier to make a lot of money in a short period of time than it is to make a little money over a long period of time. And when I discovered that, I made a decision that day. I am going to stop looking for all the hard ways to make a little bit of money. And I'm only going to look for and look at the easier ways to make a lot. And so that day, I shifted from being a hardaholic as an entrepreneur, and a hardaholic, somebody who's addicted to difficulty, if you're wondering what that is. And I decided from that day forward, I was going to be an easyologist, which means I am going to study the science and the art and the science of ease. And when I say ease, I don't mean being lazy. What I mean is I'm not going to look for the hardest way to solve a problem. I'm going to look for Occam's razor in every situation. Sir William of Occam was a brilliant mathematician, and he discovered this principle. Usually the best solution for any endeavor is going to be the simplest solution. That was my transformational moment.
That's a big one. And I absolutely love the term easyologist. And, you know, so you start doing this, 2005, you start taking off, right? Now we're off to the races. We're an easyologist. We're starting to leverage the what's working. You know, that leads a big gap between, you know, 2005 and 2017, 16, when I first came across you. But I think you've had even some really amazing years just these past few years as well.
Oh, it's been crazy. Crazy
time. And, you know, we can talk about the hardaholic times, but let's talk about the easyologist principles, right? What are you learning right now that is helping? And I mean, you've got tons of coaching clients. You've got Stage Selling Secrets where you're helping people close from stage. We have many of us that have seen you close massive stage, you know, at Funnel Hacking Live a couple of years ago. You just brought the roof down when you got up to what was supposed to be a cleanup close. You ended up hitting the home run, right? You were the grand slam close. But so what are some of the easyologist principles that we should be applying as entrepreneurs?
There are a couple. So first of all, when I do coaching, like one-on-one coaching with high-level entrepreneurs, I only coach high-level entrepreneurs. People who are struggling to make $100,000, they're not my clients. And I love them and they can read my books and they can like listen to my podcast, watch my YouTube videos, whatever. But I want high-level entrepreneurs, people who are making $250,000 to $3, $10, $15 million a year. Those are the people that I can help the most, okay? So how do I do that? I do that by showing them the first thing that almost every entrepreneur needs to do, almost all of them. They need to either raise their prices or find a program, a product, develop a program or a product that they can sell for a higher price. That's first. Okay.
Right. Yep.
Raise your prices. You want to do something that's going to change your life? Raise your prices. That'll change your life for the rest of your life. Next thing you want to do after you raise your prices is stop just selling one-on-one and start selling one-to-many.
Yeah, that's like easyology. That's the core principle, right? Magnify your efforts, right?
Exactly. And then you multiply your output. You minimize your input, but you multiply your output. And so for me, that's either a virtual event, it's a webinar, it's a live event. It's something where I can get a bunch of people who want the outcome that I can help them produce in a place, and I can show them how to create that result, and then I can offer them that solution for a reasonable amount, but something that makes it worth it. For instance, if I had in my hand $10,000 in cash, right? And I said, Tyler, I'm going to sell you this $10,000 for $1,000. You give me $1,000, I'm going to give you $10,000. Would you buy that?
In a heartbeat.
Take that deal?
Yeah.
Okay. What if I say, I'm going to sell you this $10,000 for $5,000? You still going to take it?
I'm still in.
I'll sell you $10,000 for $9,000.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. But if I said, I'm going to sell you $10,000 for $10,000, there's no use in taking that deal, right?
We can just high five and move on.
Exactly. It's a wash. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
What do we learn from you? We learn that people don't buy things from you because the thing you're selling is worth the money. They only buy things from you when the thing you're selling is worth more than the money.
Right.
And see, one of the reasons most entrepreneurs don't raise their prices is because they don't understand the value of their own offer. And they think the value of their offer is the pieces. Well, it's got 6 workbooks, it's got 17 videos, 16 audios, and a Facebook group. So they think the value of their offer is their pieces. They think the value of their offer is their person. Well, you're going to get so many hours of my time. Like when I coach clients, like one-on-one coaching clients, $25,000 an hour, or we have nothing to talk about. I'm not interested. And I don't need to make a sale. I'm not saying that because I want to get a $25,000 coaching client. I have plenty of clients. I'm not looking for clients, but I'm just saying that's what I charge for one-on-one coaching because I understand the value I bring to the table, right? So most people don't understand the value they bring to the table. So they think it's their person. So they'll sell like a $5,000 coaching program and you get 8 hours of coaching over the next 6 months. Well, I just got sick on the stomach when I said that, right? So the value of your offer is not your person. The value of your offer is not your process. A lot of people, when they're selling, they'll go through, show everybody the process they're going to take them through and say, this is why you should buy from me because this is my process. When you show people your process, it makes them not want to not buy. It does not make them want to buy. People, when they're looking at your offer, they're asking these 3 questions. Is it easy? Does it work? Can I do it? When you show them the process, you've already ruined the offer because you've already showed them it's not easy. People do not want a process. They want a button. Even though you don't have an easy button, you have to present your offer to them in a way that makes them feel like it's doable for them.
Right.
So if the value of my offer is not my process, it's not my person, it's not my pieces, what is the value of my offer? The only value your offer has is the payoff. What do I get as a result of paying you this money? If the payoff that they receive, this is how I value my offers. If the payoff you receive is not worth at least 10 times what it cost you in the next 12 months, then your price is too high. For instance, I teach people how to sell from stage, right? I charge $55,000 for that. It's a 2-day class, and we go through an 18-page manual. Why? Because more is not better, faster is better. If you're paying me for a result, the faster you get that result, the better you feel about it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And see, I'm not magical. I just understand what works, right? I've got clients who most people would have. I got one client who took this training. He's one of the most brilliant marketers I know. One of the most brilliant salespeople I know, he thought live events were a waste of time. This is what he told me. He said, Myron, live events are a waste of time. He said, I did a live event. It took me 2 days. I only made $150,000. I said, yes, because you didn't know what you were doing. He took my training. His first event he did after he took my training, he did $1 million in sales, $1,020,000 in sales, first event after taking that training. I got a lady who bought my training. She was a homeschool mom, and she had a business, but it just wasn't thriving. She took this training. Her first event she did after she took that training, she did $108,000 in sales, first event. I got a 22-year-old kid who flew from Hong Kong to come to Tampa, Florida to take this training. He went to Malaysia where the average monthly income is $1,000 a month. He did $300,000 in sales in 1 day.
Wow.
You say, whatever. Because it's principles. All principles always work the same for everybody. And principles don't care what color you are, what gender you are, how old you are, how young you are. They don't care about any of that. What country you're from, all principles always work the same for everybody. And so what I do when I'm training people is I teach people the principles that produce the payoff.
That makes a ton of sense. And so listeners, please go to stagesellingsecrets.com if that sounds like principles you want to learn. Myron, I absolutely adore hearing you teach. You're one of my favorite educators and influencers in this internet marketing and world of business space. I'm very grateful for you coming on the show. My final question that I've asked here for years on this show is that business is about creating a lifestyle, and business without maintaining a lifestyle is broken. I know you're a big golfer and you find time to live. What is one major item on Myron Golden's personal bucket list that you're going to accomplish in the next 12 months?
I'm going to play Pebble Beach.
Okay. I like it.
That's a golf course that I want to play. And I played a lot of golf courses around the world, a lot of great golf courses around the world. I mean, epic golf courses around the world. If I can close with this one thing.
Please do.
So I think to experience financial freedom, there are three pillars that you have to use to build to fight your financial fortress. You need the leverage pillar. That's the one we talked about for most of this show. You need to have something where you have super big cash flow days where you're making $20,000 in a day, $50,000, $100,000 in a single day, $500,000, $1 million in a day. So the second one you need, so the leverage pillar is created by colossal cash flow. The lifestyle pillar is the second pillar. That's created by continuity. The continuity of our program takes care of all of the expenses of my business before anything else happens. And then the last one is compounding cash flow, and that's my investments, and that creates legacy. That's the wealth that I create for my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. When you have those three pillars in your financial fortress, then and only then can you experience true financial freedom. So I just thought I'd share that with everybody.
I love that a lot. I love that a lot. And I really appreciate it. Highly, highly encourage everyone to go learn more about Myron Golden, stagesellingsecrets.com. And you can find him on the internet at myrongolden.com. Myron, you're a phenomenal person and a legend. I appreciate your time here on the show. And now my biz ninjas everywhere, wherever you're listening, it's your turn to go out and do something.
Thank you for tuning in to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio. What you didn't hear was one more very important question that Tyler asks each guest. If you want to be a fly on the wall when the real secrets are shared, go to bizninja.com/VIP and get your access today. Remember to subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. And our one last favor, if this episode was meaningful to you, please share this podcast with a fellow entrepreneur so they can grow along with us. Biz Ninjas, it's your turn to go out and do something.